The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat Podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Cincinnati.com beat writers Paul Inner Jr. and Jim Lazarski take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Special edition because it's time to bring in two of my favorite gentlemen in the Cincinnati sports media landscape and hashtag corporate partners, Joe Daneman and Jeremy Rao from Fox 19. What is up?
Hello, world.
Oh, no. I was hoping someone would actually run down to the end zone before the game yesterday, on Sunday, I should say, and knock down the pylon in honor of Adam Jones. It didn't happen.
I couldn't find any smelling salts either.
Was that his standard move, is to knock down the pylon?
Every single game.
And he would put the smelling salts basically in his nostrils.
Yeah.
To get hyped up for the game.
Sam and Kareem have informed me before that the smelling salts usage by Bengals players is lingering on like an addiction at times in these games.
You ever seen the sideline after the game?
It's just full of it.
Littered with them. And I don't know if people know what they look like. I don't know if you've ever seen the bandit like little dip things. That's what they kind of look like. Little bags full of some kind of solvent inside that they smell. And they're everywhere.
But Joe has a theory. Isn't it you that told me you have a theory that it's a placebo, basically?
Yeah, it has to be a placebo effect. I mean, what can those actually do? I mean, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or it's 4 o'clock, or it's 8 o'clock at night. At that point, if you're not awake and ready to play, what's a smelling salt going to do?
But I've seen the look in Adam Jones's eyes. Is that just natural?
Maybe. I think that might be natural. Joe, you've seen that look.
I've seen it up close and personal, nose to nose. I've seen that look.
Thank you guys for joining. Joe, you've been on before. We've been meaning to do both of you guys here on the pod together, and there's no better opportunity than when I still don't have a partner. So I appreciate you coming in on your day off, Jeremy, too, to help. I mean, that is really above and beyond.
PDJ, the kids are napping, and they're supposed to be down for the next hour and a half. So we
can't go long.
There is someone home watching them, but I should be fine.
I would have been really impressed if you just left. Look, they're deep sleepers in the afternoon. I'll plan on being back, so don't even sweat it.
My 3-year-old has told me that he can babysit the 18-month-old, so he's close.
Yeah. That sounds good. So we will. Let's talk a little bit of Bengals. I want to give a heads up for what we're going to get to for everybody. The Bengals, obviously, they win the opener against Indianapolis, but it's the quick turnaround. Nothing opens your eyes to that more than when you walk into PBS on the Monday and you're still kind of replaying the game in your head and thinking where you want to go with your next story following up on what happened on Sunday. And all the trucks for Thursday Night Football are already here. They're already getting everything together for Thursday night's game. And it is on the NFL calendar. We're already on Monday in the normal Thursday. So it's just, it's insane. So we're going to make sure to talk about Baltimore, but we need to talk about how our visions of the season have changed. We sat down with Bengals defensive coordinator Terrell Austin today to go over a lot of what happened against Indianapolis and kind of what he unveiled. We'll get you that audio. We're going to talk a little bit about the weird AFC North. The Browns broke their losing streak by not winning. I didn't know that was possible, but how about that?
I saw today on television, I think I texted you this, it said Browns 0-0-1, best start since 2004.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Slow clap for the bottom line writer at ESPN really on good. That one. I'll give you that. We're going to get to PFF. We'll give you some of the very interesting numbers that they had from this week, including some interesting stuff on right side versus left side distribution of the running game. Our three questions segment, which stuff I've personally called out for people to shout to you guys. We've got some of those we'll get to. So we got a lot to get to. I'll pose the question I just said to you guys. Whoever wants to take it can take it. How did or did it not the opener change your view of this team's season, what they can be?
I will say that I was surprised by the defensive line, and I think most people were, to not have a lot of pressure in the first half. Granted, they started the second half so well and had a couple of sacks in the game. They were serviceable, but they weren't the defensive line I thought they were going to be in a lot of ways. I think that's probably the viewpoint across the board. But I will say that there is some optimism within that, because even looking at how bad the defense looks sometimes against an Andrew Luck who was putting on a clinic on Sunday, they still got the turnovers in big spots. They got the early turnover with Preston Brown. Obviously, that was huge in that spot. And then the turnover that clinched the game, and that is exactly what Terrell Austin came in here to do, was to create more turnovers, and it's something that we haven't seen a lot of in the last couple of years specifically. So having those big turnovers in big spots to help clinch and win the game, I thought was huge, and something I was curious if I would see, and we did see it. So regardless of the defensive line underwhelming, when I thought they would overwhelm for sure, I think that's a certain positive to take away. As far as the offense goes, I think Andy Dalton was pretty good. There were some big-time throws.
It's kind of more of the same of what we've seen from him.
It is.
All camp and preseason.
It is, and there was a big third down in the fourth quarter where I believe it was 3rd and 15, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and he rolls out of the pocket and finds Tyler Boyd for a first down. They keep the clock rolling. So there was a lot of big-time plays like that. One thing that I was surprised about big-time was A.J. Green's underwhelming performance. I understand he had the long touchdown. I understand he had a couple of catches outside of that and some big plays, but he owed Tyler Boyd his game check.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did in a lot of ways.
Which is ample.
It is ample. It's quite – you know, Le'Veon Bell gave his game check away as well, so it's just one of those things. But, no, I think that A.J. Green has got to be better. He really – and I'm not trying to come down hard on a 7-time Pro Bowler and just kind of stick it to him and say, A.J. Green, be better now. That was awful. But it was one of the worst games I've seen from him, really, across the board. To have two fumbles like that, to have a dropped catch in the end zone, potential touchdown, just a lot of mistakes from him.
Kind of reminded me of Buffalo last year when he had the mistakes, but he made up for it with the long touchdown.
And he did,
He's going to get his, but he's got to eliminate some of those mistakes. I mean, I think I have to double-check my math on it, but I'm pretty sure he has 8 fumbles in the last 46 games, which is a wild number for a receiver.
Yeah.
What did you think, Joe?
I kind of look at it with even a bigger picture look, because you look across the league and some teams that you expected to either win or perform better, like the New Orleans Saints, who got torched by Ryan Fitzpatrick, or the Minnesota Vikings, who squeaked out a win over the San Francisco 49ers. Look, no matter what you do offensively, defensively, if you get out of Indianapolis, a team with a quarterback like Andrew Luck with a win, considering the schedule you have coming up, that's a positive step forward for this team, because you look at the last couple of years, these are games they lost. They found a way to lose. They found a way to win Sunday, and that sets them up now and gives them just a little bit of cushion before they play Baltimore, who looked excellent on Sunday, and then they go to Carolina and to Atlanta, two games I don't think they'll be favored to win. So if you walk out of Indianapolis with a loss yesterday, you're staring at a possible 1-3 start in September, and that's the kind of hole that's hard to climb out of, considering the recent history here in Cincinnati of, oh, no, not again. Back-to-back losing seasons. Are we staring at another losing season here in Cincinnati? So yesterday, the things that stood out to me, I would echo Jeremy with the pass rush. I think it'll be fine. I don't think that's anything to worry about. I think the Colts just did a nice job blocking the Bengals yesterday a little bit. But what stood out to me most was that Joe Mixon looked like a star. He got the ball in his hand, and he looked like he had a gear that I hadn't seen him have in his year-plus here in Cincinnati. He hit the hole hard. He hit the edge hard. He had good jump cuts. He made plays every time he touched the ball. And look, I know sometimes it just works out that way, but when Gio Bernard came in, they didn't look like the same team that when Joe Mixon was in. And we were texting about it during the game. Joe's got to be in. I know they want to mix in Gio Bernard, but in a close game and you're trying to come back in the second half, the way Joe Mixon was performing, he was getting 8 and 9 yards per touch on average. He needs to be in there because he was a playmaker and a difference maker on Sunday. And they didn't block well for the run game in the preseason. But yesterday, they made plays all over the field with Joe Mixon with the ball in his hand. That was my big takeaway, was I said before the season, I thought Joe Mixon had a chance to be top five in the NFL in rushing. I have no reason to believe otherwise after that performance on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the thing about it, they delivered on their promise. I mean, they promised to basically base this offense around him.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what it looked like. I mean, he had the highest percentage. It's like these advanced stats, the utilization rate now, which I saw today, I liked. It was the highest utilization rate of any running back that played at least 50% of his team snaps. So anyway, it was out there. He was like, every time he was on the field, 57.4% he got the ball. 6% of the time, it works every time.
Yes.
But, I mean, it really was. It was, they were dedicated to featuring him, and kudos to Bill Lazor for sticking with him, because that's been a knock on Bill in the past, is getting away from the running game, getting away from that stuff. And, you know, I think they learned that they can base their offense around him and be successful. It's going to be harder because the Colts defense is not great and will probably prove to be a bottom 5-10 unit by the end of the year. But I think it's encouraging that you have Joe rolling a little bit.
I think it's encouraging, too, the ball distribution throughout the team. I think Joe had 22 touches. Mm-hmm. AJ had, what, 6 or 7 catches?
Had 6, yeah.
And then
Tyler Eifert had a few.
Tyler Eifert get the ball a couple times. Maybe John Ross get the ball a few more times.
Yeah.
I didn't like the back shoulder throw they tried to him early in the game. That's mm-hmm. not his game.
Yeah.
He's not a go up and make a play on the ball kind of guy. But they've been preaching to us since he was drafted that he can be a playmaker in the red zone. And we saw a fade to John Ross in the end zone.
Vintage, exactly why you drafted that short area quickness to create space
exactly
instantly.
Right.
And Andy put the ball right where it needed to be, and he just accelerated to go grab it.
But every playmaker had a chance to make a play
in this
game, and they all made big plays.
Even Tyler Boyd on that third down.
Tyler Boyd made a big play. Maybe you get Giovanni Bernard mixed in a little bit. He got some touches.
Right.
He'll make some plays going forward, but I thought the ball distribution going forward, I think most importantly, is that A.J. Green gets at least 10 targets a game. Joe Mixon gets 20-plus touches a game. Those things happened on Sunday. If those things happen going forward, you give your best players a chance to make plays.
Here's the thing. I feel like they obviously were better than the Colts, and they proved that. Most teams will be. I was a little disappointed as a whole that they weren't a little better. I mean, they were sloppy. There were certain parts of it where you're like, oh, this looks like last year, right? And you're like, this looks like last year's team. And I don't think they were as impressive as you would hope for them to be, and as impressive as they'll need to be to beat teams that are better than the Colts. I mean, we talked about it in the lead up. You couldn't have caught the Colts at a better time. They have a new coach, a guy who's a coordinator for the first time ever in the NFL. You know, you've got Andrew Luck coming back. They were missing their left tackle. They have a bunch of kids on defense that they were playing in the first game. You caught them just right. And to me, I think it needed to be not that you should beat any team handily in the NFL, but it needed to look a little more secure. I mean, look, they are one Clayton Fedulum ball poke away from us talking about them losing and staring 0-4 in the face. Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
It was not as definitive as you would hope for it to be, considering, I think, you know, the level that the Colts will probably end up at the end of the year.
Well, I'll say as well, you know, it's funny how the day of the game, there is like the game day post-win optimism. It's kind of a feel-good thing. They got the win. They found a way. Here are the stars. And then you let it kind of fester a little bit, you know, over the next 24 hours or so, and you start thinking about, okay, what they did and how you felt watching that game. Mm-hmm. Third quarter down 23-10. I talked with Joe about this. It reminded me of, I've been around here for 5 years. There have been two games in the second half in my 5 years here where I thought the Bengals had zero chance of winning. I don't care about ESPN probability. I mean, in my mind, zero chance of winning. The Seahawks game in 2015, mm-hmm. that they scored 20 straight and came back and won in overtime, and obviously 2015 was a special season. The other game was on Sunday against the Colts. And it was the same feeling of there's no chance that this team is coming back to win this game because it did feel like last year. And so that's where I think a lot of the questions come up. Now, they did find a way, but what do we know about the Colts and how good they are? We thought we knew how bad the Bills were, and then we saw the Bills lose to the Ravens by 1,000 points. And here come the Ravens. So I think there's a lot of questions still about what can this team be. But I thought this team was going to be 9-7 before the season started, basically because I thought they were going to beat the teams they should beat, hedge a couple, and then, you know, everything else would kind of balance out the way it does. And so I think that the Colts were a team that they should beat.
Definitely.
Was it impressive? Was it something that should make you feel great about the season? Not necessarily, but as Joe said, those are one of those games that they found a way to win. They would have found a way to lose that last year. And so I see them on the other side of that, where they were 7-9 last year. I still see them at that 9-7 clip where I thought they would be winning a game they should win. But there's no reason to be uber positive after it anyways.
My question and what I said earlier was, does it matter if they did look impressive? Does it really matter at the end of the day they didn't play well and they won? Because you look across the league and there are teams who are supposed to be really good, supposed to be playoff teams, who either lost or didn't look impressive themselves. And I understand going forward and analyzing the game and talking about the game, they're all good talking points and things you have to be concerned about and talk about and get better at going forward. But it felt like last year, and I was getting ready to tweet that, and I pulled it back because I said, if they come back, old takes exposed.
Yeah.
Here comes the egg on my face kind of thing. So I didn't tweet it because the Bengals did come back, and they won. And I feel no different about them today than I felt yesterday, which was, I think they have a playoff roster. I think the schedule's harder than people think it might be, but it's going to come down to those 50-50 games. They're about 4 or 5 on the schedule. Can they win those 50-50 games? And I thought Sunday – look, I think I'm the only one in the room who thought Sunday that the Colts actually are a halfway decent team because they put out one of the best quarterbacks.
You were saying that a bit.
Because of Andrew Luck. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think Andrew Luck playing like old Andrew Luck, which for the most part he did yesterday, the Colts are exponentially tougher than they were last year when Carlos Dunlap had to save these guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You were saying that, though, all week, and I know you because sometimes you say that. I feel like it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, so I wasn't sure if you really thought that the Colts were going to win that game.
I said it all offseason that the Colts are
better than
people think.
You've been saying it for a while.
I have been.
And I had no – I mean, we play this game. It's the – what is it? The do-or-die pick-em game we do. And you can pick any team in the NFL. And I said I'm going to ride or die with the Bengals because I am fully confident they will win this game even if they don't play their best. I was sweating bullets in the third quarter.
I mean, anybody
that predicted them to win, I screamed and in a blowout when I was asked on Bengals pregame radio. I said, I think I've picked so many L's for this team in recent years, but I honestly felt that they were going to blow them out. I thought that they were that much better. So I think everybody was thinking this is just not what you anticipate. But then, you know, they did what good teams do. Good teams turn it on and can hit another gear when the other ones can't. And bad teams beat themselves, and that's what we watched.
Yep. Say it out loud. Road game of the NFL against an elite quarterback.
Yeah.
And you won. I think that says something. I think that says something at least about this team this year. I don't know what it says, but I think it kind of stands to the point that everybody around Cincinnati thinks that the top-end Bengals are a playoff team. That wasn't top-end Bengals on Sunday by any stretch. But what this team can be is a playoff team, and Sunday was a step towards the playoffs. I thought that personally was one of those 4 or 5 coin flip games that could go either way, and right now the Bengals have now one on their ledger. Either go forward, like the Saints game at home, I think is a coin flip kind of game. At Baltimore is a coin flip kind of game. Those are the games I think are going to make the difference in the Bengals season, not when they play Tampa, not when they play at Pittsburgh, because we can probably decide the outcome before those games even start. But it's the coin flip games. I thought Sunday was one of them that are going to make the difference in this team being a playoff team or not a playoff team.
They lost so many of those coin flip games last year, just like this, where how many times do we talk about they give up the drive at the end of the game?
Titans game.
That Titans game, they can't make the tackle. I mean, over and over, Pittsburgh home, I mean, meltdown. Yep. Didn't make the play that they needed. Now, the last two Bengals games I have watched, they made the play that they never make.
Start fast, finish. Start fast, finish.
Play smart.
They did it.
But you know what? And teams, it's funny you mentioned the Seattle game from 2015, because I remember talking about that game with Tyler Eifert, like on one of our many shows. I'm probably Beyond the Stripes or something. And he said, talking about the Bengals' playoff loss to the Pittsburgh, that he was going through that game as they were coming back, thinking it felt just like Seattle. And in that whole 15 season, every game felt like one that they knew they were going to find a way to win. They had that mindset and attitude. They expected to find a way to win. And you have to, when you do it a couple of times, you now expect that you'll find a way to win, and your chances of doing it, you know, thinking it into reality, it are much better. And teams that believe in themselves and believe that they're going to do it, in this league, that's the ledger difference that we're talking about. I mean, and I feel like they could be developing some of that. Now, they could go get absolutely housed the next 3 weeks, and it's all gone, and they think that they sneak again, and they might be right. But, you know, I think that there is something to the resiliency they showed and the way that they came back down 13 on the road against Andrew Luck to just take the game over and make all the plays you need to play to make that. You're like, okay, that is something – that is a trait – regardless of how good, it doesn't matter how good the Colts are. That's a trait that can carry you through a lot of close games this year.
Yeah, I think, and as well, I mean, you look across the NFL, and we talked about last year with the AFC, some of the teams that made the playoffs, man, it wasn't really that impressive. And how impressive do the Bengals have to be? Joe talked about it. I mean, you just got to win. You don't have to do it impressively, but how impressive do they have to be? No, they just have to find a way to win these games. And Dre Kirkpatrick has been saying all offseason, I know both you guys have talked with him as well, I'm done with the mottos, I'm done with the statements, I'm done with all of this. We just have to be about it. And it sounds so cliche until you see them actually be about it and kind of change things in the right direction. And so the last two games we've seen, week 17, week 1, they've done it. And by the way, back to Joe Mixon, in his last three complete games he's had, like full workload games, he's had 305 total yards. He's averaging more than 5 yards a carry, rushing, I should say. So he's looking like the back we thought he would be, and that in a lot of ways is going to be the engine for this team. And if the defensive line is just a little bit better, Andrew Luck is so darn good at moving around in the pocket that I think he changed a lot of the defensive line scheme on Sunday. But if they're just a little bit better, and if this offense can just ride Joe Mixon like they have and be serviceable otherwise, I think there's a lot of positive left still.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest concern coming out of this is that what we knew it was coming in. That's the right side of the offensive line being atrocious. And, you know, Marcus Hunt in 60 career games has 2.5 career sacks. And then yesterday he ate Bobby Hart's lunch twice. Yeah. And for sacks. I mean, 2.5 in 60 games. Bengals fans have watched a lot of ineffective Marcus Hunt in their life, and they just watched Bobby Hart. He literally just fell in front of him on one of them and got Andy just absolutely destroyed. He's going to get the quarterback hurt. I'm curious, and we'll find out more as we talk to Marvin Lewis the next couple of days, how short that leash is at right tackle. I mean, they very quickly went into a rotation last year and felt that settled things down. How willing is he going to be to go to whoever, Jake Fisher or first round pick turned healthy scratch Cedric Obwehi, going forward? I don't know. I mean, they thought Bobby Hart was the best, and that probably tells you what you need to know about where Jake Fisher and Cedric Obwehi are.
I just don't know what you do. What are your options at this point? We know the options. The options didn't work last year. I don't know why you think the options would be any different this year. And it was glaring. You could watch it. I mean, it almost felt like, I'll share a story. When I was a kid, I played peewee football, and I was the smallest kid on the team. And we had a kid who eventually went to play Division I offensive line, and they took one of the sleds out, you know, the sled you hit and you try to push. So they put me on one end and him on the other, and they said, go. And he pushed his end, and mine didn't move, so we went in a circle.
Yeah.
Because his end went like that. That's what it looked like on Sunday with the left side of the line and the right side of the line. The left side of the line is doing its job. They're moving guys. The right side of the line is almost like an open gate. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know what you do. You have options of other guys you can play, but obviously the coaches chose these guys to play because they thought they gave them the best chance to be successful. And the coaches have watched them for several months, an entire offseason, and I don't know by what one game's going to make a difference for you to go out and decide that, okay, we got to try somebody else when we could have tried somebody else all summer long, all preseason long. I think their hands are tied. I don't know what they can do at this point to try to improve it. I mean, you can try other people, but they've tried other people and hasn't worked. At this point, I think they're out of options.
I'm picturing Marvin Lewis pointing at the doorway saying, Eric Winston isn't walking through that door.
No.
Cedric Obwehi is not the guy. No, that will not work. I'm confident of that.
Jake Fisher's not the guy.
Jake Fisher isn't either, but I would actually give him a chance over Cedric Obwehi. Man, I've seen Cedric Obwehi on skates against third stringers.
Yeah.
At practice and camp, it's not good.
Yeah, they don't have any answers.
They don't really have an answer.
They never answered that question in the offseason, and we said it over and over again here and on your shows, and you guys. It's obvious they did not answer they were hoping that Frank Pollock could get it out of those guys and that the change in system would get Cedric or Jake going, or the change of scenery would help Bobby Hart. And none – I mean, we don't – from what we've seen thus far, none of that seems to have worked. One thing we do know is that it definitely did not work against Indianapolis to this point, and now it's going to get much harder. That was Indianapolis' team who hasn't gotten pressure on anybody all preseason. They have no real pass rushers. The only real pass rusher they had was John Simon, and they cut him.
Yeah.
I mean, they had – and we don't have to talk anymore about how much harder it's going to get than that. That's probably as easy as it's going to get. And Redmond and Hart both gave up 5 pressures. If there was 13 pressures given up by the offensive line, 10 of those by Redmond and Hart, including both sacks. That is – I don't know. The problem is when you look around and you don't have any other answers. It's just shrug time. It's Costanza shrug.
It is Costanza shrug. That's all you can do at this point.
And Marvin said that he if he wanted to pick one guy in the Bengals locker room to go down an alley with him, it would be Alex Redmond.
Cool, but can he block?
Redmond may be going down an alley before anybody's comfortable admitting it because he's walking out to his car to leave here for good. Because
exactly.
you can't keep giving up 5 pressures a game.
And I was told by one of the assistant coaches that Trey Hopkins was a guy that they felt comfortable with for a long time until it was at the last minute Alex Redmond was the guy they went with, and now it feels like that they go back to Trey. What's going to work? I'm curious to see how it shakes up this week.
PFF is going to yell at us later about Christian Westerman because Christian Westerman is everybody's favorite player.
Yeah, I know.
Right now. And I don't know. They make their judgments. They've watched all of Christian Westerman. They are professional coaches.
Correct.
I assume that they have reasons why they are not playing him. I know that he's only played against scrubs, so going by the fact that no one's beat him is a little hard to say because we haven't really seen him, but they haven't really given him a chance to go against starters at a certain point. I mean, could it be worse? He could. To me, the right tackle is the bigger concern, even the right guard. But it's all concerning because Baltimore is going to come in and they are going to have plenty to say about exposing that. And it's right there for them on tape too. Every blitz, every stunt, everything they do is going to be about attacking the right side of the line and taking advantage of it. All right, let's quickly. I do want to. We talked a little bit about defense. I want to bring in a conversation with Bengals defensive coordinator Terrell Austin that we had earlier today. Was sitting down with reporters. It's about 10 minutes long and really runs the gamut of everything you might have questions about regarding the Bengals defense coming off of their opening day win against the Colts. So here is Bengals defensive coordinator Terrell Austin.
Yeah, I think the key is we found a way to make the plays when we had to. And I think that's the biggest thing you come out of a game and did you do enough to win? And that's really what it comes down to. There's always going to be things to improve. Even if you play a great game, there's always things to improve. But I think the most important thing is you find a way to win, and our guys did that.
The defensive line wasn't getting much pressure early. When you look at it now, I mean, I know their kind of game plan was to get out quick passes. What was your overall assessment of how they played?
Yeah, I thought we did well. I thought we did a good job controlling the run game, and there was a lot of short passing. I think overall when I ended up coming back, at first you feel bad. You go look and say, boy, there was a lot of completions, a lot of this and that. But at the end of the day, they had 53 completions. They had one explosive play, a pass play of 26 yards, and they had one explosive run of 12 yards. So I think in our mind, you know, there's lots of things we can do better, but if we can keep teams – to those types of numbers where they're not getting big explosive plays on us, we're going to have a chance. We're going to be in about every game and have a chance to win every game.
How much is that just a deal? That's what Luck does. He's great at taking what the defense gives you and find ways to work that to his advantage. Because, I mean, the one touchdown drive, I think every play was just basically one of those little dump crosser or something like that and just kind of took it.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, that's the mark of a really good quarterback. He doesn't force the ball. He knows when to take when the throws are there and what to take, and when to throw it away. There was one we had some pressure. He just threw the ball out of bounds. He does a really good job. He's really, really, really a good player, and so I think they got us on a few things. They did a nice job there, and but again, I think our guys kind of rose up at the end and we made the plays we needed to.
What do you think you have to work on? What's the biggest things as you assess the tapes you need to work on?
We got a lot of stuff to work on. You know, one thing I was disappointed in were the penalties. I think that we can do a better job in that. Our guys had done such a good job in the preseason in terms of making sure, in terms of how we tackled and not getting penalties, and then to have 3 of those penalties in the game was a little disappointing. So we'll continue to work on that. But that's the penalties were the disappointing thing, the flow of the game and the different things that go on. We have some some things we needed, you know, just shore up with our coverage and our communication, and I think we'll be better.
What do you tell Sean? I mean, was that a did you feel like that was the right call, or did you think he did?
I don't think it was meant with any malice. I just think what happens is at the end, our technique's got to be better, and if our technique's better, then maybe there's an opportunity to avoid having to be judged by New York, I guess is the best way to put it.
What do you tell your defensive lineman? I mean, I know you're supposed to, you know, take him to the side, roll him, wrestle him down, put a mattress and pillow down there so he lands softly. I mean, what do you tell your D lineman how to sack the quarterback?
Yeah, that's the one I think that's a little bit harder because you don't practice that right. with our quarterback. So right. what we've got to be able to do is once we make contact with the guy, we've basically got to be able to take him down and move him to the side or move ourselves to the side. And it's an unnatural move when you're trying to tackle a big guy. And so we just got to work at it because those are the rules, and we have to be able to abide by the rules, or if not, we're going to continue to get these.
You said, though, big guy, 6'4", 240. Flacco, big dude. Roethlisberger, big dude. I mean, you go to the side of these guys, and all you got is your arm. I mean, you're in jeopardy.
Well, yeah, they'll shrug you off. Yeah. And so we got to – I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's a tough situation, but it's part of the rules, so we got to make sure that we figure out a way to get it done. And so we will. We'll work on it till we get it right.
Seems like that sack right after that penalty did it pretty perfectly. Made sure there was no way they could throw a flag on that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You always have to be aware of it. And it's the same thing with the helmet contact. You have to be aware how you want to enter on the tackle and how you finish on the tackle, and that'll help. And sometimes, you know, the game's so fast that sometimes guys, they're just trying to get the guy down.
And that was blindside. Luck didn't see him. So you can go different technique than when he's looking at you, and now you got to try to finagle him and he's looking at what you're doing. That's a tough deal, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. I don't, you know, like I said, we'll just keep trying to work at it and do the best we can to make sure we're within the rules, because what we don't want to do is hurt our team, and those plays hurt your team.
I thought one of the big plays on that final drive when Vigil dropped Wilkins for a 5-yard loss on first down really mm-hmm. kind of put him. Did he just sniff that out, or was he coming on a delayed blitz and just?
Well, I can't tell you everything. All I can say is that he made a heck of a play,
yeah.
And it was a big play because you put him behind the eight ball a little bit, and that helps.
Overall, how did you feel he did? I mean,
I thought Nick played a heck of a game. Yeah. I thought he was all over the place. He was really, really good, and he played a lot of snaps, but he was really good.
The final drive also, Hubbard plays 6 of his 7 sacks with a game on the line. Was that just a product of, you know, guys, you just had to get fresh bodies in there because it was –
We needed to get some fresh bodies in there. Our guys were a little bit tired. It was a lot of plays, and there was some hurry-up involved, so – we had to get Sam in there, but that's my fault. We needed to get Sam in there a little earlier than that. I think Sam deserves to play a little bit more, a little bit earlier, so it's my job to make sure I get him in there a little earlier.
Was he juiced up after that fullback snap? I
mean, was he absolutely.
Getting ready to go.
Yeah, he told me last week, he said, Coach, they're trying to steal me. I said, no, Sam, you're going to stay.
You came in preaching, right? You came in preaching turnovers. We heard Scoop all training camp and everything, and then Now you get a play to put up there for the next 16 weeks. I mean, it couldn't have been scripted any better for you to win a game like that.
Right. And I mean, that's one thing we talk about, because those things, like we said, they change the game. Indianapolis is going in with an opportunity to win the game. Clayton makes a heck of a play. He hits the guy, proper technique, knocks the ball out, scoops it up, two hands, and then he takes off. So those are the things that we preach, and hopefully what our guys see is that there's a reason why we were doing all these things. And we just got to try to build on it.
I think everybody's going to be scooping now, huh?
They should have been scooping before.
Hardy over Vinny down the stretch, was that just because Vinny hasn't practiced such a long time coming back from the injury? Or?
I think so. I think Hardy was more ready to go in for this game, and we'll see how it shakes out this week if one of those guys has to play, who will be ahead of the other.
Right.
Jesse's first game. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on how he handled it, especially when Sean goes out early on, even more pressure on him?
Yeah, I thought he handled it well. I thought he did a good job for the most part. He was in the spots he was supposed to be, and he did a good job communicating, and he did a good job tackling back there. Yeah. So I thought that he did all the things we thought he would do. And it was, you're right, when you lose a veteran presence next to him, and then you put he and Clayton in there, and they hadn't worked a whole bunch together because it's usually Sean and Jesse. So I thought that they both did a good job in terms of adapting and getting, making sure they got the communication right and playing well.
Fetcher's numbers were outstanding. Obviously, 10 tackles as well as the big play.
Mm-hmm.
Did he play as well as his numbers looked in terms of being where he was supposed to be, how he was supposed to do?
Yeah, I thought Clayton did a really, really, really good job. He's a physical fly-around guy. You know that from special teams. Those guys that usually excel on special teams like to run around and hit. And he did a really good job for us. Like all of our guys, we've all made some mistakes back there that will be cleaned up. But I think when you look at the overall body of his work, he did a pretty good job for us.
The one explosive Ebron touchdown pass, was that a communication issue there?
Yeah, we had. You know, I like to tell our guys when there's a bad play, it's usually not just one person. It's usually a lot of things involved. It's like a wreck.
Right.
And everybody just sees the end result and says, well, hey, there was this happened. That's why the wreck happened. And so that's what it was. We had a bunch of mistakes on that play from multiple people. And so we did not get it done right. So that's, you know, that falls on me to make sure that they understand exactly what they're doing and how to do it so we don't have those mistakes.
The touchdown to T.Y. And then can you talk me through that a little bit? Because the call on William, is that something you're talking about? Is that bad technique to hit in the back and get that?
Well, I wasn't sure that, like, to me, that's a bang-bang play. I don't think William was trying to lead with his helmet or anything. I think he was just trying to make, you know, get to the point and make – break the pass up, but they called it, so I don't. That one, I don't.
That's think. Not one you put in that other bucket with those.
I wouldn't think so. I think that was one where they're throwing a slant. We're trying to
break on the
slant and try to get there, and there's a collision, and so I didn't see any malice in that one. But again, I'm not.
Is that a thing down there on the goal line where Williams should be playing that tighter? I mean,
well, there's different things. Again, it's the one thing I think when you look at it. I may have gotten a call in a bit late. They were on the ball, and our guys were just getting out there. So I'll take that one for me. I won't put that on William. Our guys are scrambling there, and I got to do a better job.
All right. Much thanks to Terrell Austin, who joined us earlier today. So let's talk a little bit about the AFC North, which shook out a little differently than maybe you would have anticipated.
AFC North.
That's right. No L's. You know, Pittsburgh tying the Browns is a win for the Ravens and the Bengals. I mean, look, how many times the Browns just don't win. To give up an auto win, what has in the previous few years been an auto win in the first week of the season, when you, especially you're up 21-7 against the Browns in the fourth quarter. You know, kudos to Hugh Jay's crew for pulling off the tie. But that's an interesting debate. I've been saying I think the Steelers have to regress this year, and the drama unfolding with Le'Veon Bell makes that maybe even a little bit more of a solid thing. But I think this was the first step in that direction. It can't be just a flash in the pan. Where, oh, maybe the Steelers just had a bad day. I mean, I don't care how much better the Browns are. They're still the Browns.
Jeremy's looking at me because he knows how I feel about the Steelers. And I have a standard go-to line I always have with Pittsburgh: as long as number 7's healthy, they're the best team in the AFC North. That's the way I always feel about the Steelers and the way they play. And this is so Pittsburgh, what they did Sunday.
Of course it
in
is.
In Cleveland.
Yeah.
This team does this every year. They play one or two road games every year. You go, what in the world did you just do?
Yeah.
And Browns,
Big Ben throws 10
always
picks.
Give them trouble. Yeah, yeah. The Big Ben road home splits are just wild at this point.
Yeah.
What he does on the road is just completely mind-boggling, because he's a guy who's had a lot of success in the NFL and has played road games his entire career, but his home road splits are just weird. But this is Pittsburgh. This is what they do. People talk about Le'Veon Bell and the drama that's going on. They thrive on drama. This is what Pittsburgh does. This is what kind of gets them going. They like to play angry. They like to play with drama. They like to have this kind of stuff going on with them. I fully expect that Pittsburgh will be Pittsburgh, and at the end of the year that the North still goes through them. The North still goes through Pittsburgh.
Week 17, right before New Year's.
There's no doubt. That game is going to be Bengals-Pittsburgh Armageddon. And
that's awesome.
Unless Roethlisberger or Dalton get hurt at some point in the year, that game is going to be Armageddon between those two teams with a whole lot on the line. I have no doubt about it.
But I do think the big takeaway from Sunday was, oh boy, the Ravens.
The Bills
really
are just,
impressive.
Didn't we just learn that the Bills might
they're
not
terrible.
Win a game? They were bad when we saw them in preseason. They were god awful, and maybe that was false hope for the Bengals because everybody started hopping on the Bengals bandwagon after they went up to Buffalo and destroyed their line and John Ross, and they did all this stuff. Perhaps they just played one of the worst teams in football, and that's what we really saw.
But I'll say this: the one thing we did see is that their new playmakers made plays. Yeah. And they made Joe Flacco look good. They made them look faster. They made them look more dangerous in the red zone. John Brown, Michael Crabtree, these guys made a difference on Sunday again, maybe against a JV NFL team in Buffalo. But the one thing that was missing from Buffalo last year are guys who can make plays with the ball in their hand or make plays down the field. They flashed a little bit on Sunday with that ability. It feels like when the Bengals play the Ravens, Justin Tucker kicks 3,000 field goals every game. Now they're in the red zone with guys who can make plays in the red zone, and they look different.
Did Marvin think Justin Tucker could make a long field goal?
I'm just going to take a drink on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, I look at what Baltimore did, and I say, okay, I'd like to see it against somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes Thursday, to me, so interesting. I think these are two teams that you watch both of those games and say, I'd like to see them against somebody better and see if they really have. You know, the Bengals and the Ravens are going to be in this battle to try to see who can get a shot at Pittsburgh. I mean, they've kind of exchanged that in the last few years where one year it's one team, the other year it's the other team. And the Bengals have had the Ravens' number. Are they really better? Thursday's going to be extremely interesting for that reason, that these two games are massive because these are your ledger games. I mean,
right,
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah. Two teams that everyone thinks will finish in that 8-8, 9-7 range, and whether they beat each other will probably determine whether they do or not.
And I think that's interesting looking back on it because I know we look back at schedules and Week 10 counts just as much as Week 1, as Week 17 counts just as much as Week 2. But you look back to these two opening games for the Bengals, and I said it last night on Sports Wrap. I said, I don't know if people really understand how important this win was today in Indianapolis when the Bengals won Sunday against the Colts because of what it now gives them as far as a margin of error. Because if you lose that game, your margin of error is immediately gone in Week 1. It's out.
Yes.
Because if you then play Baltimore, and again, maybe not a coin flip game, I would say the Bengals probably should win this game. We'll find out.
Ravens favored by one.
Ravens are favored.
Early line is Ravens by one.
Interesting. So we can put it in the coin flip territory. But again, you have Carolina on the road with Cam Newton. Then you're at Atlanta with Matt Ryan, a team who can be top end as good as anybody in the NFL with that offense and a really good defense as well. If you lose Sunday against the Colts, man, you're behind the eight ball already. And the point is, I can't remember Week 1 and Week 2. Maybe we're making a bigger deal out of them because we're talking more about it. But I feel like these opening weeks, I can't remember the games feeling this big as they do to the Bengals this year.
I think it feels bigger when a year ago people lost their jobs two games in. You know what I
mean?
Great point. I mean, when you look at what happened last year, they lost their margin for error by getting dominated by Baltimore, and then they didn't score a touchdown in that Thursday night loss to Houston, and all of a sudden, Bill Lazor's the offensive coordinator. And it's people, they understand they couldn't put themselves in that hole again, and that's the importance of Indy for sure. It's just, you know, you look at it and when we look back at the end of the season, we will look at this Week 2 game. You'll say, well, the way they play Baltimore, it's inevitable. And you can say that every week, but particularly in division, it's a whole different animal. And we've got primetime Andy, right? So we get to roll that baby
time
out
Andy,
there.
Baby.
Roll that baby out
there.
Everybody loves that. Everybody loves primetime.
But you know,
narrative.
The funny thing is that the preseason games are played under the lights, and they look just fine.
No pressure.
That is
no pressure
truth.
In the preseason.
I will say, I mean, if the Bengals are going to consider themselves a playoff team and a team that is back on the rise, you've got to beat a team like Baltimore. I'm not trying to throw disrespect to Baltimore
at home.
You have to. I'm not trying to throw disrespect to them. Obviously, it's impressive what they did against the Bills, but what do we know about the Bills? What do we know about the Colts? Baltimore looked great, sure. So did the Bengals against the Bills when their starters played a little bit in the first half. So this is a team, to me, that they have to beat at home because it's going to be so much more difficult down the road. And as far as the AFC North across the board goes, it's funny what Vegas thinks about the Steelers. We know what Joe thinks about the Steelers. And again, I'm not saying you're a fan. You just You're just stating a fact.
You love the Steelers. Observer.
Stating a fact. He is just not a Steelers fan. He's an observer. And you know what? From what I've seen from the Steelers in my time here, I can't refute that. I've seen the Bengals beat the Steelers once. It was on the road in Pittsburgh in 2015, which was obviously a great season. But Vegas is already saying the Steelers are playing the Chiefs, who looked really good on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Steelers are hosting the Chiefs this week, and they're giving the Steelers a 5.5-point advantage.
Hashtag Vegas knows.
Vegas seems to know.
Vegas didn't know much about the Bear Kittens or the Bengals this weekend, though.
Oh, nailed it.
Both weird lines that nobody understood.
Very bizarre.
Nobody both understood proved to be wrong.
Yeah.
It was the first time I ever thought, I think I might know more than Vegas.
The Browns, the Browns, by the way, got to go to the Saints, and I think they're 8.5-point dogs.
That's not going to go well for the Browns.
Not good.
Let's take a quick break while we're talking about numbers and jump in with PFF. It is time to see what they had to say about what the Bengals did in Indianapolis with some of their advanced analytics. Let's jump in with Austin Gale.
All right, it is that time again. We check in with our good friends at Pro Football Focus. When the games get real, the numbers get pretty real. And I thought I was really excited going through PFF stuff this morning as I sort of was trying to pick through some of the things that I thought I saw for some confirmation. It told me some things I didn't even realize, and you had to go back and watch the tape and realize what you did see. So I was bringing Austin Gale over at PFF. What's up, Austin?
Hey, man, how's it going? I mean, coming off a W, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you know, they get a W. That's the one stat that certainly matters the most. Let's talk about some of the other advanced numbers you guys have. I want to talk a little bit about the running game for the Bengals, and Joe Mixon was super involved. From a numbers standpoint, what was the biggest thing that stuck out to you? I mean, he was as involved as any running back across the league in week one.
Absolutely. He ends up playing 44 of 56 offensive snaps for the Bengals. A bell cow snap percentage by all means. He ends up getting 17 carries, 7 targets. This guy's going to be getting a lot of touches this season. And he did well doing so. I mean, he played very well, created some yards out of contact, looked good catching the ball in the backfield. I think you could even see that snap percentage increase as time goes forward because he can really do it all. I think there is some concern with his pass blocking ability, and that may affect some snap percentages here and there, but when he's running routes and when he's running the football, he plays well.
Yeah, and he looked like he was running the ball well, particularly when going to the left. And you know, it's no secret that the Bengals' right side of the line was their work in progress throughout camp and the preseason, and really the entire offseason with Bobby Hart at right tackle, Alex Redmond at right guard. You could see drastic differences in both pass pro and running the game from right to left. What were some of the numbers that you guys had on the differences between those two sides of the line?
Yeah, the differences were drastic. Rushing to the left, Bengals running backs averaged 6.5 yards per carry across 13 carries. Running left and right of Alex Redmond, 5 carries, 8 yards, 1.6 yards per carry. That's drastic. And defenses are going to pick up on that if that weakness continues. And you just can't have such, you know, yin and yang on the offensive line, or else defensive coordinators are going to lick their chops and really start to attack that right side of the offensive line, both from a pass protection standpoint and rushing the ball, and running the football. I think this is a big concern for the Bengals right now. They have to, you know, fix Bobby Hart, or, you know, maybe even replace Redmond with Westerman. I don't know. Something has to change, though. That kind of play from two guys on the right side of the offensive line is going to hurt this Bengals team when they go against better defenses. The Colts spending close to one of the top defenses in the league. So when they start to play some of these better defenses, it's going to hurt even worse.
Yeah, and the same thing in the protection area. 5 pressures, 2 of those sacks given up by Bobby Hart, and 5 pressures given up by Alex Redmond, according to your guys' numbers. I mean, that's the offensive line was credited with giving up 13 pressures on the entire day, and 10 of those 13 come from those two guys on that right side. I thought those were pretty telling numbers when you look at the big picture of what happened in pass protection.
Yes, that's a major concern. When 10 pressures are coming from one side of the offensive line, again, this just tips the cap, you know, tips your playbook to the opposing defensive coordinator and really puts your offense in a bad situation. You look at Westerman, Redmond's backup ends up allowing zero pressures across 100-plus snaps in preseason, and then Redmond week one ends up allowing five total pressures against a very mediocre Indianapolis Colts defensive line. It's a major concern, and I think the Bengals really need to go into this week, do some self-scouting, start to think about their personnel, start to even think about Obiehi and, you know, Jake Fisher, seeing who can fit in and really kind of solve this problem on the right side of the offensive line.
Nick Vigil was everywhere, and give me some numbers to back up the facts of what I just said.
He was definitely everywhere. Seven defensive stops, which is an astronomical number. Without all of the grades in from the game from week one, we're unable to say that is the most of any defensive player, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be the most. He had four in the run game, three in the pass. He was all over the field, led the team with 12 tackles. I think Vigil, you know, really proved the point that he can do it all, and very excited to see him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, seven stops. I'd argue it was that game as a pro. Well, you know, you guys, with the regular season kicked up now, I mean, the numbers, it's really a perfect time to go get the edge, get the elite program, whichever one that you want to see to track all your players, all your teams. And it's great for fantasy, too. Don't you guys have a lot of stuff you guys do for fantasy players during the year, don't you?
Absolutely. With fantasy, whether you have the elite or edge subscription, you're going to be able to see snap percentages like you see with Joe Mixon, really understand who's getting those high touch totals, which is obviously the most important metric regarding fantasy projection. Subscribe to us, subscribe to Elite. We have all the numbers for you. You don't just have to listen to them here. You can dive into them yourself.
All right, Austin. Appreciate it, man. Thank you for joining. We'll be catching up with you after the Thursday game to get a little bit more on what happened against Baltimore. Have a good one, man.
You too.
All right, welcome back. Thanks again to Austin Gale and everybody at PFF for what they do. Seriously, if you get a chance, jump on that Edge or Elite subscription because there is awesome stuff in there. Also, shout out to 50 West. 50 Fest is coming up. Make sure you get out to the Pro Works. It is always a fun event. Bands, beer, food, all that stuff. Never a better time to get out there than when they have 50 Fest. But I recommend going pretty much every night and drinking coast to coast, but that gets me in problems. Relationship issues come when you're so focused on drinking coast to coast as often as possible.
What kind of beer is a coast to coast?
IPA.
Good choice.
It's an IPA. Okay. The Doom Pedal, their Belgian White is fantastic as well. It's really good if you're a beer guy. You're not much of a beer guy, are you? Do you drink? Are you a wine drinker?
I am not a wine drinker.
He's a big beer guy. I drink beer. I drink just domestics. He makes fun of me all the time.
I like a good IPA, a brown ale, you know, a lot of different things.
Drink local. You need.
I do drink local.
Support
local. I drink local.
Local stores are important.
It's kind of a beer snob.
I'm a local guy. I'm more of a coffee snob than a beer snob.
Both.
Okay.
What's your coffee of choice? Are you a loyal Dunkiner?
I don't know if there are any sponsorships involved here, but no, I like to go to local coffee. I am a Starbucks guy a lot. The Casi Cielo Dark Roast is probably their best roast.
Why does everything at Starbucks have to be in a different language?
It's like Italian stuff.
Why don't tell me it's a venti. I want a medium. I want a damn medium.
My wife had. I don't go into Starbucks because I'm just that guy.
You are. I've gone on road trips with Joe, and he stands like you're shopping with your wife at Victoria's Secret or something. He stands at the door and says, "I won't go in there."
I feel uncomfortable. I don't speak the language. My wife was in the car once, and I had to go get her coffee. She had to write it down for me. I went to the cashier or the barista. See, yes. Another word that I don't know. I literally just handed them the sheet and said, make this.
I need this.
Make that.
Yeah. It's like, it really is. I mean, I remember being on when I was in high school, when I'm like one of those mission trips to Mexico, and you had to literally learn how to order food just to like get any, right? Yeah. Like at one of these like roadside places. I remember thinking like, I learned how to say three things. I learned how to say like taco and like the toppings I wanted and then like the things I needed to say. And I was like, okay, I can order food here. I feel the same way at Starbucks. I go in there, I say Pikes. Medium, you know, and yeah. they know medium, even though they're not supposed to. Sometimes they'll look at me funny, and I'm like, you know, the middle size.
Yeah, exactly.
Those
just
went,
point to
I
that
used to work at a point. Coffee shop that wasn't Starbucks, and they would come in and say, "I'd like a grande coffee." I'm like, "Grande? We're not Starbucks,
get
bro. Get
out of here!
Get out of here with the grande."
You were a barista?
Yes, he was.
I was a shift manager at Caribou Coffee.
Wow,
it's like not a big deal. Yes.
I am a district manager.
That's right.
I drive a Dodge Stratus.
I was an assistant to the regional shift manager.
Oh, that's great. All right. Let's play a little three questions here with you guys. So First of all, from at Fultonator, he asked, can you confirm Tyler Eifert is healthy?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He took was standing hits. After the game. He didn't seem to be hurt. He took some hits. He blocked.
Did anybody else say, just go out of bounds? Yesterday when he had the long catch on the sideline and it was either finish the play with a shoulder down and try to get another yard or just go out of bounds. Man, just go out of bounds. But I am curious to ask him today if he thinks he will start to ramp up his snaps and how much he will play going forward. They've said
I have
they've
a snap
a
breakdown. I have a Tyler. I literally went back and watched every Eifert snap to give you these nuggets.
Okay.
He played 23 snaps. I'm counting ones where there was a penalty. Played 23 snaps.
Decent number.
40% of the total, I think, is what it ended up being. He played 7 of the 8 third downs, so he pretty much was primarily out there on every third down. 8 on first down, 8 on second, 7 on third. So spread evenly across when he was out there. They threw it 18 times and ran it 5. 17 times he was in the slot. 5 times he was attached with his hand in the dirt. And 1 time he was the fullback, which is when he actually went out for the pass and caught that ball. So they you know, for the most part, he's out there on longer distance situations, lined up in the slot and on pass plays. However, they did enough of sprinkling him in other areas so that it wasn't predictable and he could play decoy role and things like that. He was a decoy lined up attached on the A.J. Green touchdown and went out over the middle of the field to try to draw the safety in.
And A.J. was in the slot on that play, correct?
A.J. was in the slot.
3 catches, 44 yards, right, for Tyler Eifert?
Is that right?
That's about exactly what you'd want out of him outside of a red zone touchdown. And he came in a couple of times in the red zone. I thought for sure they were going to do one of their favorite plays against the Browns that they've run at least 7 times against the Browns a year where they fake the handoff to the running back. Andy Dalton rolls out and finds name your tight end in the end zone. They did not do that with him. I thought for sure they were going to on Sunday. But eventually he's going to produce in a very big way for them, I think, at this rate.
I'm trying to remember all of his catches. I remember the big catch, the 30-yarder early in the game.
He had a check down on a third and long.
Big catch at midfield late in the game.
And he also got the PI drawn on him, which was just a terrible play by Colts, on that third and long that kept that drive going.
But what made him so successful early in his career and the plays that made him a Pro Bowler were him going down the middle in the seam, catching balls above the defense. That's when he took huge hits. Because he's a wide-open target in the middle of the defense, going up, exposed. He took huge hits then. I don't remember there being any kind of ball to him thrown like that yesterday. And that's what made him so good, made him a Pro Bowl-level tight end, that he would go up and get those balls. It didn't look like they tried those on Sunday. Will they start to ramp that up as the season goes? I don't know, but it seemed like they were at least trying to protect him, even with the scheme of the offense.
This is their plan. I think this is their plan. And I think once you get into December, they're going to reevaluate it every week to see how's he feeling. Are we productive on the plays where he's in there? Should we add him in certain spots? So maybe it ticks up a little. But I think, honestly, what you saw is probably an ideal way that they feel like they can get him to January playing like that. At Cincy JD, Jim Owens wants to know, if they ask you to do the floss with them, run.
Come on, man.
I thought your floss was good. If you haven't seen it, go. It's on Twitter, right? I believe it's
on Twitter, or you just put on Fox 19, and it's on at least 5 times
a
day.
It airs a lot.
Of me doing the floss, and Jeremy's giving me a look right now. I did not plan on doing that. That was not my idea.
That was our promo people.
Yes.
They said, who's going to dance? And I said, I will not be the one.
But the floss is nowhere near anything I would ever do if I'm like, I loved a wedding dance. Yes. I'm a big wedding dancer. I have a great time at a wedding. I would never floss at a wedding.
But now you can.
But now,
because now it's in your bank. You've got that.
The thing is, it's such a go-to for every kid that's 12 years old or younger that I see it all the time because I coach, you know, youth soccer and youth baseball and all these youth sports, and that's all the kids do. So you see it, you pick up on it. But when I saw it on TV, when you see yourself on tape, you see the mistakes you make. My elbows are bent. I can't believe my elbows are bent. It's the first thing my son said to me. He's going to be 10 this weekend. He said, Dad, your elbows are bent. That's trash. I said, are you kidding me?
But in fairness,
he can rock a floss, and I'm learning from him, and I cannot do a floss.
In the promo, though, I think that was like one take.
One take.
And by the way, there were a lot of things in that promo. I just got to say, I threw a football through a tire.
Second take, it went through.
Hey, but it was a small tire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that was not a small
tire. And it was rolling. It was a small rolling tire. Ask Andy Dalton if he could do that.
He could.
Okay.
I would assume yes. Okay, so finally, at Dundeal wants to know, what's up? Are we going to get some Sunday night Periscopes from you guys?
Dundeal's our guy. He is the first person who logs on to our Periscope.
We've
every
missed
Sunday
Periscope
night.
The last 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, Periscope only comes out when we have time. Yeah. And Sunday during football season, we run out of time real quick because we are slamming all day long because we're all over the newscast doing Bengals stuff. But we enjoy the Sunday night Periscope because it gives us a chance to, I don't know, show our personality a little bit.
I guarantee one will happen this Sunday night.
Yeah, because there's no Bengals game.
Guarantee it.
There's no Bengals game this Sunday. Yeah. And the Periscope, people always want to know, how do you come up with the topic for the Periscope? It's usually just Jeremy and I sitting at our desks. We're next to each other for like 8 hours a day. And as much as we are close and we're friends and we get along and we have the same taste in humor and all the sports interests and everything like that, we do differ on a lot of different things like coffee or food or movies.
Even the way I say coffee.
Caffey. He
says
caffey and sass. Caffey sass.
Coffee sauce.
Coffee. No, then he drops down to coffee. Then he goes into coffee.
He wants me to
like
say
this.
Coffee sauce.
I don't say coffee sauce. You don't say that. You say caffey sass.
It's ridiculous.
You're getting Periscope
this, I mean,
audio.
This
version.
Is kind of the
this
stuff that you can expect on the Periscope.
So make sure you set aside some time on Sunday night to watch this.
Yeah, you got to set aside time. Absolutely.
It's crazy.
Fox 19, Sports Wrap on Sunday night. And what else you guys have going on? Obviously, just every night you guys are down there, right?
The big final quarter show is really starting to take off. It's 11:15 on Friday nights. That's starting to get, and we go out and about. That's what people talk to us the most is our high school coverage, and we take a lot of pride in that because as a local TV guy, that's where you have to really hit your home run because people can get Bengals coverage all over the place, nationally, locally, radio, TV, newspaper, website. High school highlights still are kind of our bread and butter. And so 11:15 on Friday night, final quarter. We have some new things in the work. We're trying new things and having some fun with it. We like to think we have more games and more fun than anybody else in town on Friday nights.
We do have a lot of fun. One local magazine said, if you have a twisted sense of humor and might be on something, you'll love it.
Hey,
I think that was City
take
Beat.
That.
I think that was
That's
City
the demographic
beat.
You need to.
We'll take that. But yeah, Sunday night sports reps for us, and even Saturday night as well. You know, we try to load up on a lot of reaction always. And you know, like we did Sunday, it was 15 minutes of Bengals coverage because we feel like, man, if you watch ESPN, you're not getting locker room interviews from the media.
No,
you might see Andy Dalton for a second flash up or a big-time player, but we try to pretty much do a lot of raw reaction inside the locker room. So we'll do that all season long on Sports Wrap.
I've said it before. I will say it again. The hardest working guys in your local TV news landscape. They are the best. Jeremy, Joe, thank you so much for joining here. I very much appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have you back some point in the future. But I will have news very, very soon on not needing to call on all my friends to come into the BBP. Should be a partner in tow here very, very soon. I'm excited to share that news with y'all. So anyway, appreciate everybody listening, and we'll catch you on the walkout on Thursday night. So have a good one, everybody.